Would you mind saying your name for the tape?
John Arcudi.
Thank you. Would you mind telling me something about your childhood?
Oh, well, I was born in Westport, Connecticut, and educated in Westport Public Schools. My parents, we lived above a grocery and meat market that my parents ran. Born, what, I guess, post May 26, 1921, whatever that means. Graduated from Staples High School in 1938, went to Yale. Then graduated to Yale with a major in economics in 1942, did a term of law school, went off to war, served in the U.S. Army, eventually became a lieutenant on General Patton's staff in France and Germany, and came back and finished law school, and then started the practice. Well, I taught for a little while at Yale as an instructor in economics. Then I came to Bridgeport in 48, started the practice of law in Bridgeport in 49.
That'll give you a biography. Right, a great outline.
Yeah.
Could you tell me a little bit more about your parents? I understand they came from Calabria.
My father came from Calabria in 1913. My mother was born in Norwalk. Her father had come from Sicily in 1890. My mother's family went back and forth to Sicily several times until her father died in Sicily in 1913. Then my grandmother took her family back to Norwalk, and my father and mother met in Norwalk. They both worked in the rubber factory, talking about World War I, and they met and they married in 1919.
Uh-huh. And what was the reason that both your parents came over initially?
Well, my maternal grandfather came over for the usual reason that most immigrants did, to better their economic condition. And he ran a fruit and vegetable store in the center of Norwalk. He used to, in those days, ships would come on the Sound from New York. He'd get deliveries there. Now, the center of Norwalk has been changed since the flood of 1955. But there used to be a dock. He'd also go in by train to New York to get produce from New York. I guess he went back to Sicily because my grandmother had asthma, and the Sicilian climate was better for asthma than the New England climate. But then my grandfather died due to a stroke. And my grandmother decided that she wasn't going to raise a family in Italy. She was going to bring them back to Norwalk. Mm. My father, he was born in Calabria, in the southernmost province of the continent, the province of Reggio Calabria. And he was born in 1887. And he came in 1913 he and his older brother, also came at the same time. And they ended up, my father came to Bridgeport because there were some people from his same area of Italy in Bridgeport, and then he worked on highway construction gangs around the state before he settled. It was not very long, probably the first year or so. And then he settled in Westport and was working in Norwalk after that. He actually was drafted First World War, but didn't, near the end of the war, he got the flu, and he was sent home. I doubt that he was actually in the military for much more than a month at that time. And then he met my mother, and they married in 1919, and bought the store and started a family. They had seven children. I was the oldest. The first one they had didn't survive, so I was the oldest of the seven who survived. All of us were born in Westport except for my brother, who was 21 years younger than I, former first selectman of Westport, who just lost an election. He was born in 1942, but my mother was old enough at that point. She was 43, she that one, the obstetrician book, was a little bit of a problems in the birth, so she was that one was born in Norwalk Hospital, but all the first six of us were born in Westbrook. Mm. Yeah.
So did you live in, was it at, were there other Italians in the neighborhood?
Westport had a, when I grew up, Westport was a town of probably around 7,000, and there were a couple of thousand Italians in that 7,000, mm. most of whom lived near the railroad station in the Saugatuck section of Westport. I imagine that the settlement of Italians in that area began people coming in working on the railroad, for instance, because Saugatuck is where the railroad station in Westport was. It was in Saugatuck, near the Saugatuck River there, down south, a couple of miles south of the center of town, which was also on the river, but up further north. So that, yeah, there were, and practically all of the customers were from the Italian group in Saugatuck. There were some of the Italians who had settled in Westport who lived uptown, but the majority of them lived in Saugatuck.
And were many of those, many of the people who lived in the neighborhood from where your father came from?
No, most of the people, most of the Italian settlers in Westport came from an area of Italy that is now a separate province. It was part of the Abruzzi area, but the Campo Basso part of the Abruzzi area, which is toward the center of the peninsula, is still part of the southern Italian culture, which is a little different from the northern Italian culture. But most of them came from Campo Basso, the ones that in Saugatuck, the Italian in Saugatuck, with interspersing from other areas of Italy and the Neapolitan region. Very few Sicilians, for instance, and really not very many Calabrians, actually, a few, but not very many. That was the composition of the colony then.
So
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead,
please. No, they lived, it was, I suppose, almost like a rural slum kind of thing, because the housing didn't differ much from when my mother's sister had a family in Bridgeport, whom we would visit almost every Sunday. Mm. And the housing in the town of Westport with we had yards, but it was closer to the housing in those sections of Bridgeport that I saw, rather than the kind of idea that you have of luxurious Westport living. You know, that part of Westport, Saugatuck, at that time was more urban than the northern part of the town. Although in Saugatuck you still had some large estates, but they weren't where the concentration of population was. For instance, Eno, who's a great traffic engineer, he had an estate there in the Saugatuck section closer to Norwalk, and several other estates were there, you know, rather spacious homes, but not what I'm talking about, were actually the blocks, so maybe four, five, six blocks or so of people, that was pretty concentrated, very urban architecture, you know, not very distinguished.
Yeah. And how did your parents end up there?
Well, of course, my father and his brother were living in Westport, and my father worked in Norwalk, and he met my mother because she lived in Norwalk and worked in Norwalk. And they had the opportunity, I mean, he proposed marriage, and he had saved some money. And my grandmother, I guess, lent them some, and they purchased a store. I mean, that was one of the steps up the immigrant ladder. Usually you get a little capital, you maybe One of the things, of course, with the Italian immigration, most of it came from southern and central Italy, and a large percentage of those immigrants were illiterate. So that if you were literate, you already were, if you had any kind of leadership ability at all, you became kind of a leader. And my parents, they wrote letters for all of these people, which has, of course, also helped in the building up clientele for the store. But they wrote letters to Italy for these many of these Italian Americans who were illiterate. And this is probably, it is true in all of the Italian American communities, starting at the end of the last century and continuing on to the middle of this century. We're still in this century, only 3 years to go.
Yeah. Well,
it's 2 years to go. We're at the end of the...
True.
Yeah.
So what had your father done in Italy that before it was your mother's family that was
here?
Right.
Well, my father had... his father was a kind of a sheriff, a minor... official in his little town, part of the one of the things, for instance, in Italy of those times, it was something that persisted was tenant farming. And a lot of people were tenant farmers, and there were fairly elaborate legal structures where the owner, usually a nobleman of some kind, would own the land. He'd lease it out on leases to these tenant farmers, and then he would get back half their crops or something of similar nature. And for instance, my grandfather, one of the duties he often had was at the end of the lease term, he'd go to serve papers to these people saying that the landlord had the right to end the lease. He never did. But, for instance, that it was kind of a minor police or judicial position at that point. Well, judicial may not be quite the word, but I mean, governmental anyway. That was my grandfather. Of course, my grandfather could read and write, which already put him among the leadership group of his little village. And all his children went to school. They could read and write. I think he had 9 children, my grandfather and grandmother. So that, and my father would, in that kind of a family, with he himself, for instance, one of the things that happens in those small villages was that you could buy the tax assessment rights, you bid. And therefore, you would be the tax collector. And you'd get a certain commission on what you collected and gave to... Well, I think my father was in that group right before leaving. He was 24 years old when he left Italy, so that, maybe a year or two he was in the tax collecting group, probably because of my grandfather's influence, probably a little political influence, that kind of thing. So that's what he did, but he determined that... he could do better for himself economically by coming to the United States.
So growing up, living above the store, did you work in the store a lot?
Oh yeah, we all, my mother, because we had a large family, you had to, everybody had to cooperate. I certainly worked in the store. I was the oldest. I was the first introduced into those skills. I could slice meat, and I could do things and wrap packages and even deliver, nearby when you could, on foot. I never was on a bicycle or anything like that, so that was not very far away, but I'd even deliver as a little kid. And we'd learn but plus not only the store, but also the household tasks. With that many children, my mother, each of us learned how to wash dishes, how to mop the floor. whether we were male or female didn't make my, and of course since the older ones were the male, myself and my brother were the first two, and we were, so we, you know, my mother made sure that we all did that. And everybody in the family, had to acquire some of the skills. A few of us, I suppose, myself, my brother, the older ones, and then probably, this is rather funny, the fifth child, who was a girl, there were, the first two were boys, the third and the fourth were girls, the fifth, she and I and my older brother, we were the ones that, I guess, acquired most of the storekeeping skills. That's really kind of funny. I never really analyzed that before. We did those things. The child number, the first girl number three, and second girl number four. They never really did much work in the store. You know. I don't know how those things happen, but they happen. It becomes an enterprise when you have that prolific. Population trend there.
Was that your main occupation other than school?
We didn't go until I went to college. We didn't have any jobs that paid any money.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's where we were.
Right.
And that's when the first payment job that I got was, of course, my father was a little bit of a leader in Republicans in the small towns in western Fairfield County. Most of the small towns were Republican, despite the New Deal, which had come in, and the Italian Americans in the larger towns were all swept up by the enthusiasm for the New Deal, and there were a lot more Democrats among the Italian Americans in cities like Norwalk and Bridgeport and Stamford or Danbury, whereas the smaller towns, the coastal towns of Darien, Greenwich, Westport, you had, I suppose the power centers were run by the Republican Party, so they tended to become Republicans, and my father was a Republican. And he was something of a leader. Eventually he got on the Republican town committee. So to come back to my first paid job, the vacations, I worked in the cleaning schools. You know, I got paid for, you know, that was my first paid job in the of my life when I was my freshman year of college, my summer. And then I did it also sophomore year, I think, sophomore year, I worked summers at the beach, I guess. Again, I got money for that. Of course, in college, I worked when Yale had part of the first year, I waited on tables in the restaurant, and I got my meals for that in the
college.
In Commons, right. And that's where Ed Logue, incidentally, when I first met Ed Logue, he went the same route. And then I got bursary jobs after that. Well, I was the secretary to the Italian professor after that for the last 3 years.
Hmm.
I paid for my board and room. It's on scholarship for the tuition.
Were you, I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about growing up. Was your family, were in fraternal organizations or other kinds of organizations?
The organizations, there was the Italian Republican Club. My father was president of the Sons of Italy Lodge, which dissolved. They had, in the history of the Sons of Italy in Connecticut in the 1920s, they had an insurance fund, a mortuary fund. This fund became insolvent because of the Depression, and that affected many of the lodges, and my father's lodge dissolved. But that was an important organizational activity for him because he was the president of the Westport one. And he also, as I say, the Republican Club. He didn't originally belong to the St. Anthony organization, which was rather important. In Westport, or in Saugatuck really, because it used to have an annual feast to celebrating St. Anthony at the Saturday closest to June 13, which was the St. Anthony's Day. And with a lot of fireworks and the parade from Saugatuck to 2 miles down to the center of town, also to go to church and mass. The church was about a mile away, the Church of the Assumption. But he became part of St. Anthony's later, really, almost by World War II time, and after World War II, because of the insurance costs and whatnot, with the fireworks landing on cars, there used to be tens of thousands of people who would congregate there for the. They stopped it. They stopped the St. Anthony celebration. But he, just about at the time, World War II time, that he began joining the St. Anthony celebration. I think, of course, the Sons of Italy had dissolved because of the problems, the insolvency of the insurance fund.
Mm-hmm. Was religion important in your family?
Very important to my mother. She taught us all the prayers, and she was totally bilingual, both in English and in Italian. She taught us the prayers in Italian, and we all got First Communion and Confirmation and so forth. My father originally wasn't, even though his brother in Italy, his younger brother, had become a priest, had become a Monsignor, he really, until the Depression, wasn't going to church very much, except maybe on the holidays, on Christmas and Easter. And then he began daily church going, weekly church going. Well, it's one of the complications. I said that, we lived like in an urban setting, but the urban setting was at least a mile from the church. So that made it, in those days, certainly in the 20s, not everybody had a car by any means. That made it a little distant. The church of their homelands for these Italians was very close by. And similarly, my mother growing up in Norwalk and in the province of Palermo in Sicily, the church was always close by, but that distance, that mile, I've never really analyzed it, but that's my conclusion, it made a big difference in their attachment to the church. Plus the fact, of course, that the Catholic hierarchy, the Catholic clergy, was mainly Irish. And in terms of immigrant history, the Irish were an earlier immigrant group, and it always happens that the later immigrant group, who maybe are economic rivals of the earlier immigrant group, there's always clashes between the Italian and the Irish, and there were. Now, I suppose that's one of the things that's reflected in the attitude toward the Hispanics or toward the blacks who come into the Northeast in the last 70 years or so. And they're like the last group in the labor pool, I suppose.
Did the Depression have much of an impact on your family?
Well, we were lucky in terms of food because of the store, and I can remember having to make out relief vouchers for people who were on relief. They'd buy things at the store, but we had to fill in what they bought. And some of the things that they bought, like olive oil and cheese, grating cheese, they were relatively expensive items. And in the culture, my parents determined early enough that they're buying a gallon of olive oil, which would be very good because they could use it with food that was much cheaper, like the pasta and whatnot, but it was expensive. So learned very early that you shouldn't put olive oil on the chick. So we'd always, the oldest child, to be a little inventive about what they bought for the relief check. You know. And certainly not cheese. Cheese, that kind of cheese compared to the brick American cheese, was very expensive, you know. So you, well, anyway, that's one of those little tricks. Sure, that part of what was happening in the early 30s at that point. You know, I was 9 years old, 10 years old, 30 to about 35, 34, 35 before the depression restrictions sort of lessened. Yeah, no question, depression. And a lot of the older, the girls usually in the families, and of course there were a lot of them because the birth rate was high, would work in the Norwalk factories, while most of the men, their parents, their fathers, that is, would be working construction jobs. Some of the lucky ones had obtained jobs working on the estates around Westport. Again, pretty much maybe not construction, but gardening and that kind of thing. So that construction, one of the things of the New Deal that was very important were the WPA projects and that kind of thing, which were construction projects. So these people without construction jobs would be working on the WPA projects. So certainly that was very, very important. And they were very, very proud people, but all of a sudden they lost some of their sense of being, and some of them were ashamed that they were working. But the work part of it, according to kind of ease the, and you didn't, still the families were large. They may have worked, they may have also had relief vouchers, you know. That's what they used to call it. They used to call it relief. I mean, the change to calling it welfare came much, much later in the history of America. You know. And the relief in terms of the governmental history and analysis, the relief was run by the municipalities. I mean, there may have been money that was funneled in from the federal or from the state. I think federal, I'm not exactly certain of this, but it was funneled through municipalities so that people would have to go to the town hall for forms and that kind of thing, and there'd be somebody who ran it as part of the municipal government. You know, I remember that. And when I'd be making out these weekly vouchers selling what food they bought, I mean, that's where they'd go. They'd go to the town.